Greetings to the brothers and sisters at Kirkwood. It's good to be with you this morning and worship God. Certainly appreciated the perspectives that we were given this morning in the devotional and also in the songs. I don't know if you feel like Esther this morning or not about your life. Do things seem to be in order, or is there just chaos and lack of purpose? Well, I believe that God wants to do that for us. He wants to give us direction. And thought about how that some of those thoughts are foundational to the message this morning. Some time ago, I was given a title. Title is, and I'll give it to you now, and then we will just move on into the message. Stewardship in the Age of Consumerism. Stewardship in the Age of Consumerism. And as I thought about this topic, I had to admit that it's really too big to cover in 40 minutes. Something that we face every day is the counter to this message. We are told almost every day that if you're going to feed your happy, you have to have what I want to sell you. How many of you this morning are happy with where you are in life? Are you happy? Are you finding contentment? Or do you have a list of things that, boxes that need to be checked off before you're happy? Well, we're going to think about that some this morning in various ways. And hopefully this will just spur your thinking for this week. When you see that advertisement, however it comes to you, to raise a question mark, do I really need that the way they say that I need that? Hopefully it can make a difference in how we live our lives. I invite you to 1 Corinthians 4 for a few verses on stewardship. And this is taking the verses a little bit out of context, but there's some principles here that I believe are good for us to consider. 1 Corinthians 4 Verse 1, let a man so account of us as the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Here we have the word steward. Steward of the mysteries of God. Verse 2, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you, or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified. But he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts. Then shall every man have praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye might learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you be puffed up for one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? Now ye are full, now ye are rich, ye have reigned as kings without us. And I would to God ye did reign, that we might also reign with you. Here we have a number of verses and thoughts on being stewards. Stewardship is the job of supervising or taking care of something that is someone else's. We understand that. It is managing another's goods. And we also, one of the main things that stands out here is that stewards must be faithful. We're judged. Yes, we as men observe each other, but ultimately we're judged by God. And we're serving God with what He has given us. Looking a little more at the title on the Age of Consumerism, I don't know how much we think about how that our lives are different from any other time in the history of the world. No other time have we had the consumption and the ease of acquiring goods like we have today. You literally can touch your screen on the phone and do a little maneuvering, select some items, and in a day or so, they show up at your door. Step, and you really seemingly almost did nothing. It is almost, is certainly a marvel of the modern world. The age, an age is a time period. What is consumerism? Consumerism is the idea that increasing consumption of goods and services is always a desirable goal, and that a person's well-being and happiness depend fundamentally on obtaining consumer goods and material possessions. How much does it take to be happy? How much does it take to be happy? Well, maybe sitting Sunday morning service, hopefully it doesn't take a lot, but what about throughout the week? What if we are denied something that we think that we are owed, that is owed to us? What happens if we can't get it? Then what? Looking more at the rise of consumerism, we know that in the American frontier life, previous to the 18th century, they lived on the meager necessities of life. And they were acquired by incredibly vigorous work. Their clothing was, a lot of it was homespun. Trips spanning days were made to acquire the necessary goods that they couldn't produce on the American frontier. We know that the general store and general dealers were established in the 18th and 19th centuries in many remote areas. As they became more populated, these stores would spring up and you could go visit the general store to get the things that you couldn't produce on your own. We know that in the early colony life, there was a lot of trading and bartering for the local produce before these shops were opened. And we know that that was a way of acquiring the goods that they need, that there were traders that came traveling through and helped to supply the things that were needed. And so we have the rise of consumerism through several developments. One was the Industrial Revolution, the beginning of the late 18th century. The Industrial Revolution led to mass production in the factories, specialization of labor, things people were focused on manufacturing certain goods, and that lowered the cost of goods, making them more accessible because factories could produce more products faster and cheaper, contributing to a culture of consumption. We also have urbanization. People moved from rural areas to cities for work, and they became a part of a new economic system centered on wages and consumption rather than subsistence farming. We also have the rise of the middle class. As the economies grew, so did the middle class, which had disposable income. They could afford the more than just the non-essential goods. They could afford the extras in life. And with that came advertising and marketing. The modern advertising and branding techniques emerged, promoting these consumer products as essential to achieving a better and happier life. And this fueled desires for new goods, for more things, creating a demand where there had previously been none. Along with that, of course, we know came credit and financing, where with the introduction of credit systems allowed people to purchase goods that they couldn't even afford, but you could do it on credit, and you could buy all of the things that are needed to live up to the life, the American lifestyle. And then we have the economic prosperity, which just seems like it's a snowball effect. The more goods, the availability of it, and leads to high consumption. Today, how many things that I have do I really need? Or what could I actually do without? You know, as we look around with all of the things that clutter our homes and our garages and our basements and our closets, what is actually essential to life? I don't know if we'll have time to get there in the message, but just some things to think about. And think about the cultural impact that all of these possessions have had on the lives that we live from day to day. Material possessions began to be associated with success, happiness, and even identity. How much of my identity is in the things that I own? Advertising reinforced this by encouraging people to buy products, not just for utility, not just for their use, but by means of self-expression. This is who I am. Why do young fellas buy loud, jacked-up pickups with wide tires? Why do they do that? Why don't the girls do that? Why do the girls do the things that they do? You know, we could all look at ourselves critically in the mirror and say, what is really driving my consumption of goods? And I think it's good for us to do. It would be interesting to know, you older ones, what was your first memorable purchase that you made? And how did you do that? I remember when I was young, saved up a few dollars and ordered a little pump on Nature Friend. And as I thought about this pump and what all I was going to do with it, you know, we went down to the creek and we built dams. And to have a little pump to transfer water would be a lot of fun, right? And so you build this mental picture of you send off these $16 or whatever it is to Nature Friend, and you think about this working pump, it said. And when I got the little package in the mail, I was really disappointed. You know, it actually, you could pump a few drops, but the gallons that I was hoping to transfer was totally unachievable. And how many things in life, though, are that way, that we have these grandiose ideas, and yet when it comes to it, often we're disappointed. Well, that was one of my first purchases. You know, back in the day, we had the Sears and Roebuck catalogs that came in the mail, and they were our wish list, the Christmas list and all the things that were there. And that was pretty an amazing little book. But today we have just endless amount of items. And it would be interesting to know of how many items were in the Sears and Roebuck catalog and how much is available today. You know, that explosion of, and where does it stop? It just seems like it's going on and on, and the ease of purchasing that and the whole push of the ads that are promoted on the billboards and on media in the various ways is this whole idea that, you know, you can't be happy until you have this next thing. And what has that done to us? What is that doing to us? And then when you get this thing, how it's going to change your life. And there's so many different illustrations you could give. You see the ad on the page, or maybe it's a video or whatever it is of the vehicle that will take you anywhere. And if you could ride in that luxury, the euphoria that would go with it, or maybe it's a sweater that would make you look young and slender again. And you know that if you buy that it doesn't do what it says it's going to do. It doesn't change your age. It doesn't change a lot of things. And so too often we look at something and the expectations that we think that are going to come from that, yeah, obviously we're disappointed. But can we see that before we buy it, or are we riding this thing of this whole consumer mentality? Is consumerism in the Bible? I invite you to Luke chapter 12. Here we have a man, and this is not a new story, but I believe it's good for us to think about this from time to time. Luke 12, verse 13. We'll start reading there. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said to him, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich toward God. And he said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, nor for the body, what you shall put on. The life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls? And which of you, with taking thought, can add to his stature one cubit? If ye then be not able to do those things, do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto them that Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass, which is today in the field, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? And seek not ye what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, neither be ye of doubtful mind. For all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But rather seek ye the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell that ye have, give alms, provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heaven that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, neither moth corrupteth. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. We'll stop reading there. A biblical example of consumerism, I believe, is given to us in the story of the rich man. Where did this rich man go wrong? Here we have bountiful crops. And as he thought about what to do with this bumper crop, he said, I'm going to build a bigger barn. Now, is it wrong to build a bigger barn? I think we know the answer to that. As a wise steward, it was not wrong for him to build a bigger barn, or at least not necessarily. But I believe in verse 19 is where he went wrong. He said, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And the observation was in verse 21, so is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Is not rich toward God. You know, the American culture and the American lifestyle in itself isn't necessarily wrong. But if it's all about me and not about God, then it has become very wrong. We know that if we apply our hand and work hard, the result is abundance, okay? But what do we do with that? He was thinking only of himself. He was thinking of consumerism. Eat, take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Look at what that lifestyle consisted of. Where was he thinking of giving and sharing and providing for others' needs? He wasn't. What was he thinking of God and how he could bless the kingdom of God? He wasn't. And the question is for you and me, what are we doing with the abundance of living in America? You know, there's a lot of places around the world where God has not put the resources that he has, like he has here in Lancaster County and the surrounding area. What are we doing with the things in our hands? Well, just a few principles, and we'll go back to 1 Corinthians 4. For the first one, thinking of faithful stewardship. Number one, faithful stewards view God as the owner of all things, and we as his stewards. Faithful stewards view God as the owner of all things, and we as his stewards. I would invite you to take notes, both sides in any age. Take notes and keep this preacher accountable. He needs that. So if you're bored and falling asleep, find a pen and a paper and take notes. Anyway, faithful stewards view God as the owner of all things and we as his stewards. 1 Corinthians 4, 7. Who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? You know, it's easy for us to think, I worked so hard, I spent hours for this money, now it's mine, right? I cultivated this crop, and now it's mine. We don't think about the fact that God put us in a place to create that and to allow that. The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Our possessions are not our own. We are the stewards. Our gifts and our abilities are not really mine, but they are given to me. God enables that. And it's important to remember these things because it reminds us of our accountability. And that leads us to point number two. Faithful stewards take their responsibility seriously. Take the responsibility seriously. You know, just to think about God. Do we believe what we just sang about Esther being in a position that God put her there because he wanted her to perform something? If we believe that, and if we do the same thing, believe that for us today, God put us here to fulfill a purpose. And so when I wake up in the morning, the first question I need to ask is, God, what do you want me to do with my life today? How can I serve you and your purposes? How can I fulfill your calling and take our responsibility seriously? Thirdly, faithful stewards have an awareness of their available resources. Faithful stewards have an awareness of their available resources. We're already in the month of February. Where did January go? The clock is ticking. What are we doing with our resource of time? Are we consuming it on ourselves? Are we giving it to others? And are we giving it to God? Time is a valuable resource. And if you don't believe that, just give it another year or two and you realize as we age, time seems to go faster and faster. Time, money, the money in the bank, in the account, whatever it might be. I was reminded some time ago of the resource of an American passport. If you're of the age that you can travel and you have an American passport, that is something that a majority of the world cannot do. You have the ability to visit, I believe it's 117 different countries, and you can use that, of course, for selfish interest, but you can also use that for the kingdom. Of course, there's other things that you need to be able to travel, but certainly one of the resources that we have as American Christians. Well, there's many others that we could talk about, but what has God put in your hand as your resource? Number four, faithful stewards move with a sense of urgency in the window of opportunity. We've heard the saying, you strike while the iron is hot. There are things that can be done in the moment. Yes, iron can be formed when it's heated and when it's at the right temperature. They have an opportunity to form it while it's glowing red hot. You know, you can beat on iron when it's cold and you're just not going to change it. And so for them to form iron, they have to use the window of opportunity. And it's good for us to think about our lives. You know, when we're young in our childhood, it's the season to learn. There's so many things that we can learn if we're listening. It's a free time. And then as youth, it's a season to give. Give some time in service. And then we have the opportunity with Lord, if the Lord opens the opportunity of marriage, we have the opportunity to have children and to raise them for God. And every day we have an opportunity of one of the seasons of life. I don't know what is totally beyond that. I'm not there yet. You know, as age, I guess there's eventually the opportunity of being empty nesters and grandparenting and all of those things as those things come along. But it's important to use the window of opportunity. You know, there are moments of opportunity that we have to reach certain people that we touch for just a short time. Maybe it's a customer in our business. Maybe it's a neighbor that's there for a few short years. We need to think about the windows as they open. Ecclesiastes talks about a time to plant and a time to harvest, reminding us of the windows that we have and the responsibility that we have to use those things while those things are open to us. Paul teaches us in Ephesians 5, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Redeem is to buy it up, to rescue it from loss. Number 5, faithful stewards labor diligently and honestly to provide necessary items. And one of the reasons that I make this a point is because there's a lot of promises out there of easy money. There's a lot of things that sound too good to be true, and the truth is that most of them, if they sound that way, are that way. You know, right now with crypto booming, you can throw $100 in and pretty soon you have $1,000, and the whole thing can grow and grow and grow, right? But what if the markets go down? Same way with, yeah, there's just a variety of places like that. They promise you big returns. Well, it doesn't always work that way. Most of us along the journey of life need to learn sooner or later that faithful stewards labor diligently and honestly to provide necessary items. Ephesians 4:28. But rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Of course, that's instruction for someone that tried to get gain through stealing. He said, no, there's a legitimate way to earn money. Number 6, faithful stewards' choices are guided by long-range values. Long-range values, not self-gratification. And I'll add the word, not momentary self-gratification. I invite you to 2 Corinthians 1. Around a year ago, I found these verses and found a word that really stood out to me. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 12. For our rejoicing is this, the testimony of our conscience, that in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, we have had our conversation in the world and more abundantly to you word. This word simplicity is an interesting word. If you do a word study on this and study the Greek root, you'll realize that it comes from a word meaning single. And the definition of this word simplicity is singleness, like singleness of heart. You have a one focus, maybe one track mind, but then you have also with that, the next definition is sincerity. Sincerity, it is something without dissimulation, without self-seeking. It is sincere. And then thirdly, it's also translated into giving, generosity, bountifulness, liberality. Romans 12:8, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. And that means with singleness of heart, to focus on the giving. 2 Corinthians 11, don't be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. I believe that's the just the singleness of heart. And but then in 2 Corinthians 8, we have this word about giving unto the riches of their liberality, giving generously. It's all the same word. And so it's fascinating to me to connect these, and actually 2 Corinthians 9, 11, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness for your liberal distribution unto them, 2 Corinthians 9, 13, how that one word means focus, singleness of heart, sincerity, and then giving. It's just fascinating to me that the one word means all three. And to illustrate this thought in simplicity, in 1930, Great Britain began building an ocean liner, and the Queen Mary was designed to be a large, luxurious, powerful, and ironically, let me back up. The Queen Mary was designed to be large, luxurious, and powerful. However, ironically, construction was halted for 2 years because of the Great Depression. In 1934, the ocean liner was launched. On May 27, 1936, the Queen Mary embarked on its maiden voyage, traveling from England to New York City with a stop in France. The voyage took about 5 days. Noted for its comfort and elegance, the ship soon became popular with celebrities, politicians, and other prominent people. It had everything that you could wish. It had two swimming pools, a gymnasium, a library, and a hospital. It was decorated in the Art Deco style, featuring striking murals and paintings, and it was known for its speed. What else would you want in a ship? It could go fast. It was a beautiful place to be on the ocean, and it had a lot of luxuries. However, in 1939, World War II began. During World War II, there were two of these luxury liners, and the Queen Mary was stripped of its luxuries to serve in war efforts. At the time, its luxuries, which were 6 miles of carpet, 220 cases of china, crystal, and silver service, tapestries, and paintings, were all removed and stored in a warehouse for the duration of the war. The luxury spacious suites were fitted with small tiered bunks for the soldiers she would be transporting. As a luxury liner, she had a comfortable capacity of 1,174 passengers. And after it was converted into a troop carrier, do you have any idea how many people, how many soldiers it might have transported? Well, it was capable of carrying more than 15,000 troops who slept in shifts. The Queen Mary's swimming pools were drained. She was painted a dull gray to blend into the ocean because they were trying to, of course, move without being... And they also zigzagged across the ocean so they couldn't really be tracked. But do you imagine these spacious suites accommodating 1,174 people to being put in the small tiered bunks, and then they would sleep in shifts. And that, if you do the multiplication, that's 12 times. They fit 12 times as many troops into this ship. Why the difference? Why the difference? Well, we know why. They were on a mission. They needed to, there was a war to be fought and a victory to be won. And the question for our lives today, are we here in life on vacation? Is this about the experience? Is this about the luxury? Think about all the things. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to have carpet and china and silver service, but you think about what is life really about? And think about this illustration, how as they did away with those things, they could be a lot more functional. And it's good for us to think about what is important in my life and what are all the extras. Jesus said, I am come that they might have life and they might have it more abundantly. If we have Jesus and food and raiment, is that enough? Or do we need all of the extras. It's hard for us to really understand here in America how rich we are. I don't know how many of you have heard about the distribution of wealth. If I have $100 here this morning, and I didn't bring $100, but if I have $100 and use that to illustrate the distribution of world wealth, half of the world's net worth belongs to the top 1%. And so if I had $100 and 100 people, one person would get $50. Okay? One person gets 50. The top 10% of adults hold 85% of the wealth. So the next 9 would split the next $35, while the bottom 90% hold 15% of the world's total wealth. So $4 go to 9, and then the other 85 split the remaining 15. The top 30% of adults hold 90% of the world's total wealth. The rest of you get 17 cents or less, and many of you would only get 4 cents. 4 cents each out of, that would be your share out of 100 people. And that represents the distribution of the world's wealth. It's hard for us to imagine how rich we are in America. It would be interesting for you to acknowledge how many of you feel poor this morning. I want to ask you to do that. You know, there's a sense where we feel very rich, and there's a sense where we feel poor. It just depends who we're comparing ourselves to. Most of us walked into church and felt like we were of some significance, but when he held up the paper and showed us the universe, we felt incredibly small. So a lot of those things are just a matter of our perspective. Well, I believe time is here to close. There's a lot more that could be shared on this subject, and I just pray that as we live from day to day, that we find our identity in Jesus. We find our happiness in Jesus. You know, we can look at all of the things that this world has to offer, and we can pierce ourselves through with many sorrows, trying to be rich and trying to live it up in America. But let's lay hold on the riches of eternity. Doesn't Jesus counsel the last church? And I believe that we are living in the last days. People who studied the Bible before told us that in the last days would be a wealthy time, would be a time of increased wealth, and I believe that's where we are today. But Jesus counsels the last church in the book of Revelation to buy of him gold tried in the fire. You know, when all the earthly things disappear, stood beside a grave on Friday, when it's time to go, we let it all behind, right? What really matters then? Well, hopefully, as we think about this subject, we'll lay hold on true riches and willingly let all of the trinkets of American earth life be behind and not try to make that a part of our life. Well, this time, let's kneel for prayer.